yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a-screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today's topic is the Affordable Care Act. In the news this week, the House has finally come up with proposals to significantly gut the act. And we'll see next week. It will go to what's called a markup in the committees in the House. After that, it will go to the Senate, and then for a final vote. It's interesting that Mitch McConnell has suspended all of the typical rules in the Senate. In other words, they're going to vote on it in the Senate without even having a hearing on the whole matter. Okay, very interesting. Rush job here. And then they're going to try to pass something before the recess in early April. So it's on a fast track. And we've got the major outlines, finally, of what this is going to be. And we'll see what comes out of it here in the next couple of weeks. We'll probably have a follow-up show on that topic. But what we got now is just the House bill, but it's fleshed out, you know, on the bones here. We know mostly of what it will. There'll be some tweaking here and there in the Senate, but we kind of know. Well, this is Paul Ryan's bill. This is the ultra-conservatives bill here, and we want to know what's in this bill here, right? First of all, to understand the bill in the general sense, this is a tax cut bill, folks, tax cuts. Big time for the rich. Yeah, the rich were required to pay some of the bill here for the cost of this plan, the ACA. But all those taxes are being repealed. So it's a repeal in the true sense of the funding of the bill. They may keep some provisions here or there that they had under the ACA, but think of this as the first of the big tax cut bills out of the docket here this year. Right behind it's coming a real biggie, and we'll talk about that in future shows, but this is tax cut bill. This is also a further privatization bill. You know, the whole trend since Clinton has been to privatize healthcare costs and services, privatized, instead of having employers having to pay for employee healthcare, we have this big trend of privatization. Probably no more than half, maybe less than that, of all the healthcare costs are now paid by employers. In other words, a kind of collective plan. And if you think about Medicare, that's a collective plan. But socially, this is a privatization bill, which began under Clinton in the 80s with the managed health care, and then Bush pushed it with health savings accounts, his proposal. That was privatization. And Obama's ACA was a further privatization. You know, if it were Medicare for all, which is the only solution to the health care cost and crisis in this country, it would be a collective plan, but it's not. It's a privatization bill. All right? And as we'll see, this is very much patterned. The Ryan House bill is very much patterned after what George Bush had, George W. Bush here, a.k.a. George the Shrub, Jr., passed or was proposing in the early part of the first decade here in the 21st century. But this is George Bush's HSAs in nasty form, purged of most of the positive elements, and purged of having the rich to pay anything on this this proposal. So keep that in mind, a tax cut bill, privatization bill, let the rich off the hooks bill, continuation of George Bush's health savings accounts, which is everybody save up and pay for yourself. Okay. All right. So before we talk about the proposal, it might be interesting to say a little bit about what was the health proposal under Obama, the ACA, Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, right? Well, Obamacare really tried to address the 50 million people uninsured, right? Actually, it's probably more than 50 million, but that's the official number. We'll talk about those numbers and the game playing of numbers under Clinton and others. But basically 50 million. Okay, so the bill cost, or ACA cost, somewhere between $900 billion and $1 trillion a year. $900 billion and $1 trillion a year. Well, that's quite a bit, isn't it? Well, did you know that, talking about cost, that employers who provide company employer health insurance for their employees, about half of all the coverage here is this employer-provided coverage, did you know that they get to write off the cost of that? And what kind of a tax cut does that amount to? Oh, about $260 billion a year in corporate tax cuts because of their share of the employer health insurance. $260 billion they get to write off. Well, you know, the workers don't get to write off their cost, their share of the cost. They used to back in the 70s, you see, but not anymore. Right? They pay the full amount and they don't get to write it off, but the health care cost, employers get to write off their share, $260 billion. Some estimate over the coming decade that will amount to about $3.6 trillion in tax cuts just for employers who provide company health care insurance. Wow, $3.6 trillion. Well, why didn't they tap that in ACA, right? Why didn't they go after that? You know, they wanted more people in the plan to make it cheaper, but you know, they wouldn't touch that golden egg for employers to write off their health care premium contributions. $3.6 trillion. Okay. Did you also know that corporations can take money from their workers' pension plans to pay up to 20% of their health insurance premium costs? Yeah, they can drag money from pension plans up to 20%, and they've been doing it for years. And that, of course, has caused great pressure on defined benefit pension plans and has caused them increasingly to go broke. All right. Lots of reasons for why pension plans have gone broke here and disappeared and replaced with 401ks, IRAs, 401ks. In other words, privatize the collective pensions, privatize the health care provisions, the collective health care provisions. This has been a trend ever since Bill Clinton. And did you know that the stock market shares of the big five health insurance companies since ACA was passed have increased by more than 300%? Yes, the big five, you know, the Aetnas and the United Healthcares and so forth. Oh, they love the ACA Obamacare. 300% increase in their stock prices. In other words, more than twice as fast as the general Standard & Poor's 500. Well, boy, it must be a good deal for them, the ACA, and it was, of course. You know, I never forget an interview I had a couple years ago with people from the United Nurses Union here, and they said something that's always stuck with me, and that is that Obamacare, ACA, is not a health care improvement act. It is a health insurance company subsidy act. That's what it is. It's an act to subsidize the company. You know, I've been on this show very, very opposed to the ACA. That mean I support Ryan and Bush and the alternative in the corporate direction. No. My position has always been that this ACA will implode itself because it doesn't control costs. There are some good points in the ACA, and we'll talk about those. The overriding feature of Obamacare is subsidies to the health insurance companies. That's the essence of this, in exchange for which they get a few features which are positive, right? And we could have gotten a lot more. The cost controls really depended upon whether we had the public option. In other words, if these premiums under Obamacare got too high or rose too fast, people could go to and enroll in essentially the same health insurance plan that the Congress has. Yeah, Congress has a great plan. They don't pay a penny. Yeah, and they, of course, pass that legislation for themselves. Well, a public option was supposed to let people in that door, and that would be a real competitive pressure on the rest of the health insurance companies under Obamacare to keep their rates down low. Well, when Obama unilaterally, arbitrarily pulled from the table, when this ACA was being negotiated in 2010, pulled public option from the table, that was it. Forget it. And, for the first year through 2012, they kept the cost down. That was part of the quid pro quo with the politicians, show that, we're controlling the cost, and after that, we can see where it goes. And of course, in recent years, the premiums here have gone through the roof once again. And there's a hidden way of raising the premiums here. There's the dollar rise, but there's also a way of reducing the coverage. Keeping the premium increases in single digit, but reduce the coverage, and therefore you're in effect raising the premiums a lot more than it appears. Okay. Big problem with the ACA, no public option, no cost control, and in recent years we've been seeing the premiums go through the roof, so that more and more people who are buying the ACA on the exchanges, the purchase has been mostly for super high deductible plans. The ACA is increasingly becoming simply a catastrophic coverage plan. That's all. If you've got to pay $2,000-$3,000 a year in deductible before it covers anything, then the plan is only for massive costs. Medical care costs, that's all it is. It's a catastrophic plan, and that's been the trend, higher and higher deductibles. That's all that people can afford other than the plan. Okay, so the problem with the ACA is no cost control, no public option, no cost control. Another problem was that Obama kept lifting what was called the business mandates, the company mandates. In other words, companies had to provide either subsidies to their workers or provide some insurance. It was designed to provide an incentive and disincentive for companies to who weren't providing employer insurance to do so. That kind of cut into company profits here, and they were resisting, and lobbying, and Obama kept putting off the mandatory provisions for the businesses. At the same time, he would not put it off the mandatory enrollments for the individuals, for the consumers. Another problem with ACA is that really they make a big to-do about sign-ups in the exchanges, but basically we only have about 10 million or so people who have actually signed up out of the 50 million people uninsured maybe 10 million or so have signed up. You know, they make a big to-do about that. The other 10 million are people who got increased coverage under Medicaid, you know, the system for the poor where they don't have to pay. You know, poor meaning working poor. Don't think of poor as homeless folks on the street. No, no, we're talking about the working poor, people who are making so little, you know. We have 50, 60 million people in this country now on part-time temp gig jobs. 50, 60 million. Wow. You know, almost a third of the workforce. Well, more if it's 50 million, it's almost a third. If it's more than 50 million, it's more than a third of the workforce. Well, when you work in part-time contingent temp work, you know, you're making between 20 and 30,000 maybe a year. So, you know, those folks are really the working poor, and there's tens of millions of them, and, you know, those were the ones who largely were uninsured because they couldn't afford it, and employers didn't have to extend their employer health insurance to part-timers and temp workers, you see. Even in union contracts, they were exempt. So you grow the labor force more and more in terms of contingent independent contractors and so forth. That's where the jobs growth has been here, all this vaunted jobs growth. It's not permanent, full-time, high-paid workers. No, it's just the opposite. It's all the part-time temps. You know, studies have showed maybe 92% in the U.S. of the hires since the recession have been the part-time temp workers of various kinds. So, you know, in Europe, it's been the same thing. 80-90% of all the hires have been to part-time temp workers since 2010. Okay, that's a big, big problem going on. All this shift to part-time temp work, gig work, independent contractors, on-call, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the numbers are huge and growing, and that's the only place we've gotten any really real job growth. There's been smatterings here and there in tech and so forth, but that's where the job growth has come from. And those are the folks, you know, who have been left out. That's the bulk of the 50 million who are uninsured. And okay, so 10 million of those have been, you know, under ACA, joining the exchanges in 31 states. Okay. 20 states refuse, the Republican states in the South and Midwest mostly refuse to even set up exchanges, insurance exchanges, where they can go buy their privatized health insurance under Obamacare. And, you know, the feature of Obamacare was that the government would kick back and provide some of the cost of those health insurance premiums to people who were basically making $50,000 and less, and it was a sliding scale. In other words, the amount of how much the government kickback was dependent upon your income. If you were, you know, $24,000 a year, the poverty level official for a family of four, you got more of your health insurance kickback. And if you were $50,000 a year, you got less of reimbursed under Obamacare. Well, that principle was a good principle under Obamacare, but you know, people just didn't sign up for the exchanges, even in the 30 states, the way they had expected them to do. So 10 million people on Medicaid coverage, which was good. The best part of Obamacare was the expansion of Medicaid, but only 10 million signed up for the insurance coverage through the exchanges, which was a big disappointment, you know. So we still got 20 to 30 million people uninsured, right? And we're paying almost $1 trillion a year for that, signing up 10 million people, and plus 10 million on Medicaid. So it was, at best, only a very partial solution. And the cost going through the roof now in the last couple of years for premiums and shifting to high deductibles, well, it caused a lot of consternation with the coverage and support for the bill. And then when you have to, you tax the rich in two ways, you know, there's a well, more than two ways. There were several ways that the rich and corporations had to pay their share of this. ACA, they hated it, you see. It's not just, you know, your average middle-class Tea Party type opposed to this. It's the very rich. They hated this plan because it really made, and we'll talk about how they were required to pay for it. They hated that. Well, in the new House bill, they've been totally relieved of having to contribute to this at all. So it's really a destruction of the plan, even though they'll keep some features, they're saying. It's really a destruction because there's no way to pay for it, you see. Well, how are they going to pay for it? You're going to pay for it when you go and enroll in one of these things. Because the reimbursement has been reduced significantly. And we'll talk about that. Basically, there's been a freeze put until 2020 on all the Medicaid cost increases. So that's how they're going to pay for it. You're going to pay more for less. The rich are going to get off paying anything. And if you're not already on Medicaid, forget it. And if you are, as costs go up, you won't be able to keep up with the coverage if the cost goes up. You know, in other words, the states that have participated in Medicaid expansion are going to have to cut benefits as more and more people enroll. as costs go up under Medicaid, the benefits coverage are going to go down, down, down. And it's going to be almost impossible to keep current levels of payments under Medicaid as more people join and as the costs go up. So the benefits and the coverage are going to go down, down, down on Medicaid. So why wasn't there more of a sign-up here? Why wasn't there more of a sign-up in the exchanges? Right? Well, first of all, the reimbursements and the credits were not sufficient. Right? Yes, they provided between a fifth and two-thirds of the cost of the premiums, but not sufficient. When you're living on $24,000 a year with a family, you can't afford even the $300 a month low-balled, lowest payments. Yeah, you're going to get reimbursed, but you've got a cash flow problem. When are you going to get that money back? You know, you're living paycheck to paycheck, and you're already not able to provide adequate food and other basics for your family at that. Right? How are you going to come up with $300? Even if someone's going to pay you back, you can't. It's a cash flow problem, right? So that's one of the reasons why people did not sign up. The credits weren't sufficient. The other reason was, for singles and so forth, the penalties are too low. If you don't sign up for the individual mandate, as it was called, you pay at tax time. You pay a penalty of maybe $300. Well, if I'm a young buck and I feel perfectly healthy, why should I pay $300 a month? $3,600 a year. I'll just pay the $300 penalty come tax time, right? So the penalties were too low, and the credits too low, right? If you're contingent labor, you just can't afford it. Also, we've seen the premiums go up two times, three times, right? Well, a lot of those premiums increase in recent years is because of the pharmaceutical companies gouging everybody with their drug increases, prescription drug increases, which the health insurance companies just pass on. Everybody, it's been undermining. The prescription drugs have been undermining not only the ACA but Medicare as well. And what's Congress doing about it? What did Obama do about it? Ditto, nothing. Nothing. They hold hearings. They talk, but they don't do anything. They could have come down hard on these gougers, these pharma gougers, right? Now, by the way, why are the pharmaceutical companies gouging the way they are? price gouging. Well, because Wall Street's got its claws in that whole industry now. I'll talk about that, right? Who's running a lot of these drug companies? Well, they're ex-hedge fund guys, you know how to manipulate price to make super profits, and they take over these companies, these drug companies, especially the smaller ones with orphan drugs and so forth, as they're called. And then they raise the price of those drugs by hundreds and thousands of percent per pill. Yeah, why do they do that? Because they got a monopoly. They got a patent. They got a monopoly on the pill, and they can, and there's no generic for it. Right? So they target those pills for which there's no generic, and they buy up these little companies and so forth. It's Wall Street that's gouging us. It's not just the pharma companies. I wrote an article about this guy, Turing, that came out. His name is Turing. Turing Pharmaceuticals, you know. Arrogant little, well, I won't say it on the show, but an arrogant SOB. Young guy, 30, you know, doesn't care who he screws over. You know, he started the, well, he didn't start it. You know, it just came to light here about a year or so ago. If you want to read how Turing and pharma companies are killing us with their price increases, go to my blog, jackrasmus.com, last year, and you can read that piece. Anyway, a lot of the premium increases that have been going on in the last 2 years under the ACA have been driven by these out-of-sight prescription drug cost hikes. You know, they come up with a discovery for ending hepatitis C, and, you got to pay tens of thousands of dollars for the treatment. And that all goes into the cost, you know. And insurers, they don't pay these costs. They just pass them on. They hike. And why can they pass them on so easily? Well, because there's so few of them. You know, there used to be a lot of competition among health insurance companies, but no more. You know, they become a tight oligopoly, as we call it. There's only four or five biggies here. They can control the price. We'll talk about that, how that came about. And therefore allowed health insurance companies to simply pass on and increase premiums at will here. Right? Most of these plans have become catastrophic plans because people can't afford anything less, with deductibles anywhere between $1,000 to $5,000 per person here. Okay, so those are the problems of ACA. No cost control, no public option. Right? No delays in business mandates, not implemented. Right? The sign-up in the exchanges has been a failure, and the reasons for the failure I've just talked about. Right? And it costs nearly $1 trillion a year. Most of that, by the way, goes to the health insurers. Right? We'll talk about that share. Okay, so those are some of the problems with the ACA, right? It's a privatization solution, therefore no solution whatsoever. What are some of the positives? Now, there are positive elements in ACA, and those are the ones that are really hyped here to the public, and the downside, the problems with ACA, not really discussed very much. Well, what are the tantalizers, right? I call them the tantalizers, the positives. Well, it eliminated health insurance companies from denying you coverage for pre-existing conditions. That was opened up under Bill Clinton in the 90s, yes, you could go ahead and exclude people for pre-existing conditions. And it got really ridiculous. You know, if you had an ingrown toenail one time, it went to the doctor, oh, that's pre-existing condition, therefore we can't extend you health insurance. You see, the health insurance companies really started boosting their profits by many, many techniques from the 90s on here. And one of them was only to insure those people that appeared particularly healthy. You don't want to insure those who aren't healthy because, you know, that's a cost increase. You only want to collect premiums from those who don't use it. So pre-existing conditions were a way of boosting profits by the health insurance companies. And the health insurance companies' cost hikes really began in the 1990s. And that, too, was because of Wall Street. In other words, a kind of arrangement occurred in the 90s where these health insurance companies wanted to grow by merging and acquiring each other. Right? Now, there were antitrust laws against that kind of a concentration, buying up each other, mergers and acquisitions. But to buy up each other, you needed to borrow a lot of money. Where did you borrow the money if you were a health insurance company? Well, from Wall Street. Well, but Wall Street said that, okay, we'll give you this money to buy up your competition, right, so you can reduce the supply and therefore raise your price. To do that, you've got to show us, Wall Street, that you get at least 22% or more of rate of return on the money. Okay, so to get 22% or more, to get the money from Wall Street to buy up their competitors, what did they do? Well, they cut out people who were using it, pre-existing conditions. You know, they did a lot of other things to boost their price, too. But, you know, Wall Street had got its claws into this thing. Just as they got their claws into the pharma companies here, you know, in the last decade, before that they got their claws into the health insurer companies in the 1990s in exchange for the money they demanded bigger rates of return. And they got them. They got them. You see, so Wall Street's behind all this problem, you know, that dirty gougers, right? That's Wall Street. All right, so, but a positive thing about ACA was prohibiting this pre-existing condition gimmick that the insurers were using since the 90s. Right? Another appealing provision of the ACA was to allow dependent coverage up to age 26. You know, had a problem here with people graduating from college and not being able to afford, you know, unless since 2000, afford health care, because most of them, you know, many of them working part-time temp contingent jobs, right? Or not making enough money to afford moving out, so they live with their parents and they get covered up until age 26. Okay. So that was good. Prohibiting limits on lifetime benefits was another positive thing about the ACA. What was that? Well, that was another gimmick where health insurers reduced their costs by putting a cap on how much you could spend. Well, you know, most of the spending really occurs when you get seriously hurt or ill. And by putting a limit on that, they limited their costs and boosted their profits. It's all part of trying to get to this 22% plus rate of return that Wall Street was demanding. Okay, so lifetime limits was in the same category as pre-existing conditions, a way of boosting the profits of the health insurance companies. Well, okay, so Obamacare was good in that sense that it prohibited lifetime limits in the health insurance coverage, right? Okay for that. Taxing the rich to help pay for it, that was a good thing. And that's why there was so much vehement opposition from the wealthy here, you know, expressed through their Tea Party types. What were these provisions? Well, there's 3.8% surtax that helped pay for it on the very wealthy here. Roughly 1%, and there was also that was on their earned income, and there was also like 0.8% on investment income, and then there was the device tax for the medical device companies had to pay a tax, and then the business mandate, which meant you had to provide insurance or pay a fee if you did not. Those were the taxes on corporations and the rich. That, you know, they don't talk that much about in the press, but that was the big big area that you know, the wealthy and their corporations have been fighting against ever since the imposition of this this bill on them. Well, under the House bill, all that's wiped off the table. All of that is repealed, and they don't have to pay anything. And how much were they paying? Well, somewhere north of $500 billion a year. Well, maybe not that much, but hundreds of billions a year for this, ACA. About half of the cost of the ACA was in these taxes and mandates for employers, and the rest were the share of the premiums that individuals who bought it had to pay for this. Okay. Another positive thing about ACA was this sliding scale based on income for the reimbursements for the monthly premiums. In other words, if you were the lower your income, the more you got rebated, and it cut off somewhere in the middle class. So that was all good. These were all positive things. Okay. And penalties on corporations did not provide. But the best feature, I think, was Medicaid. You know, Medicaid, the expansion of Medicaid, now covered 74 million people. We got 74 million working poor, you know, elderly, the blind, the disabled, children, mostly women, single adult household with children, women. You know, these are the people who are covered by Medicaid, you know, elderly, blind, disabled, children, and single moms, right? And most of that spending Medicaid is on the elderly and the disabled. You know, Social Security does not cover much. Average Social Security payout is like $1,100 a month. How are you going to survive on $1,100 a month? You can't even survive on that in Tupelo, Mississippi. Come on, $1,100 a month. Well, those folks, that's all they had, and they have to go on Medicaid in order to get even bare bones medical coverage. And don't think Medicaid is the same kind of coverage everyone else gets. No. With insurance, no. It's bare bones, really, and it's the doctors who are just starting out, or they come to the country as immigrants, and that it's not your best doctors, your best coverage, but hospitals do participate in it, so that's good. So this is the big plus. Under Obamacare, 138% of the poverty level, you would still be covered. 31 states expanded Medicaid coverage, and ACA called for increases in the contribution as necessary, as prices rise and need to adjust. A lot of flexibility in it for the states, Those Republican states, governors, still, some of them, 20 of them, still opposed it, killing people, letting people die because of that. Now, mostly in the South and the Midwest. Now, that's where you have the greatest opposition, according to surveys, to the government. It's in the southern states and the Midwest states, Government's the problem, right? Well, they're the biggest beneficiaries of government. Folks in California pay out more to the government than they get from the government, the services and benefits, and the increased payout goes mostly to people in these more lower income poverty states. Mississippi, Alabama, where they get more than they pay out, and they're still opposed to government, still opposed to Social Security and so forth, go figure that, people got their head on backwards. Okay, that was good, Obamacare, ACA, Medicare features. So these features, pre-existing conditions, coverage to 26 years old, lifetime limits, Medicaid expansion, all positive things about Obamacare. But the big problem, Obamacare, no cost controls, and kept leaving the corporations and the corporate mandate off the hook, That's a problem. That was a problem. Okay. So what do we see here with this House plan, right, that came out this past week? It's 123 pages. They kept it under lock and key. They didn't want anybody to see it, you see. It must be something they didn't want to see if they kept it under lock and key. Okay, so what are some of the provisions? You know, they let the cat out of the bag. We could see a little bit of what it is, right? Well, first of all, they repeal all the taxes, as I said, right? The 3.8% tax on earned income of the rich, amounting to $270 billion a year. No wonder the rich propose that, right? That's repealed. The 0.8%, I think it was, for the investment tax, in other words, on capital gains investments. That was part of the $270 billion. That's the biggie, see? See, those two items, the 3.8% and the investment tax amounting to $270 billion. The thing cost about $900 billion-some, right? $270 billion, almost a third of it was taxed on the rich. Then there was what was called the medical device tax. I'm not sure how much that that cost, but that's been, you know, that was repealed even before here. Now, that was $20 billion. $20 billion. That was repealed. Drug makers, prescription drug companies, were paying $25 billion. That's been repealed. And insurance companies had to pay an increase. Had to pay themselves $145 billion. You know, if you add this up, $270 billion, $145 billion. That's like $415 billion. Medical device, $20 billion. $435 billion. And the $25 billion drug makers, $460 billion in taxes on corporations and the rich to pay for this. $460 billion wiped off in the new House plan. You see, this is what it's really about. This is a tax cut. This is a tax cut bill here in the House, first and foremost, and a further privatization bill as a result. Right? They don't know how they're even going to pay for what's left of this thing. You know, the Congressional Budget Office hasn't come out with its accurate estimate yet. Probably will come out here pretty soon. But right now, you know, we're doing this without looking at the true cost savings to corporations and the rich. All right, they're going to freeze on payments for Medicaid, as I said, right, and they phase out Medicaid 2020, right. Began to phase out of Medicaid 2020, but they freeze all the payments. And there was nothing more going into Medicaid. The costs may go up. Well, you reduce the benefit states, right? And more people come on, I'll reduce the benefit states, right? The mandate for the companies to participate either by providing employer insurance or paying for their part of their share, that's gone. That's gone. I don't have estimates on how much that would have been, but that's gone, right? The subsidies for the premiums here, right, has been significantly changed, right? Instead of a sliding scale of income as the basis for the reimbursements, right, now you got flat rates, basically at the low end, $2,000 a year. If you're younger than 30 years old, and a max of $4,000 a year if you are over 60 years old, right? So somewhere between $2,000 and $4,000 a year in the subsidies, and maybe a couple hundred a month, $200-$300 at most a month that people would get on average here. Well, you know, $200-$300 a month, that will buy you a bare bones. Provision, bare bones, meaning, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 a year deductible, right? That's it. Not much. Pay more for less. Your share is going to go up, and you're going to get less back because certainly they're going to raise the prices, the premiums for this, right? No penalties on companies anymore. No individual mandate. You don't have to buy it. Exchange will be there, but you don't have to buy it anymore, right? No penalty, no tax penalty, $300, whatever. So, you know, that's part of it, too. No company mandate, no individual mandate, you know. Take away $500 billion in taxes from the rich to pay for this thing, and that's it. There's nothing left, you know. Now, they say under the plan, go buy a health saving, you know, your own plan, and we'll allow you to get a tax credit, start a health savings account. And the money you put in your savings account is non-taxable. And instead of from $6,750 a year that you could put away here, now you can put away $13,100 in the health savings account. Right? Well, who can afford to put that out? You know, most of the working poor, most working class and so forth, as I said, are living paycheck to paycheck, can't even afford the $300 cash flow. How are they going to put $13,000, $1,000 away a year out of their income, right? They can't make ends meet now, right? Okay. And in fact, if you're older, in other words, towards 60 and so forth, the insurance companies can sell you premiums for the same coverage now up to five times what they charge for premiums for younger people, right? Up to five times. Another provision is they're cutting off Planned Parenthood altogether, you know, providing assistance to single mothers and so forth. Clinics that are extremely important, particularly for working poor females, of working poor, not just that, of course. But that's totally, they get nothing out of this plan, right? And now they are keeping these three very visible features of no lifetime limits, dependents covered to 26, and no exclusion for pre-existing conditions. You know, people are so aware of that that they don't dare repeal that. But how are they going to pay for that? We don't know. You know, we haven't seen the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, estimate. Right, Medicaid block grants to the states and benefits frozen. In other words, okay, we're only going to give you so much states. That's it forever. You figure out what you're going to do with it. Right. Okay. Insurers can now sell what's called leaners, stripped down packages, insurance policy packages. Watch that with, very, very minimal coverage, all kinds of exclusions and $3,000, $4,000 a year deductibles. You know, it won't be health insurance coverage at all. But people will be able to buy what they think is something. Okay. Under the old provision, there was this battle going on for Cadillac plans, they say. Cadillac, meaning, very costly plans. These are mostly union employer-negotiated plans that provided pretty good coverage, right? But cost over $20,000 a year just in premiums. You know, the unions would negotiate as these cost increases went up and went through the roof. In recent decades, the unions forewent their wage increases and put all their money to keep their health insurance plans available for their workers. Those are called Cadillac plans. You know, typically, what does a Cadillac plan cost? The employer puts in probably $1,000 a year, and you a month, and you put in $1,000 a month, deducted from your wages, you know, for you and your family. So that's like $2,000 a month, $24,000 a year just for health insurance premiums. That's what the Cadillac plans are, you know. And the idea was to shut down those plans and make everybody go privatized, even union. In other words, end negotiating employer health insurance, have everyone go on the insurance exchanges. You know, that was the way to boost the insurance exchanges. Well, even under Obamacare, that was put off to 2020. Well, now under the Ryan House plan, Cadillac plans, will remain to 2025. Okay, so, by then everything will be dead under this plan, and the unions can negotiate for their members, keep plowing more and more money into maintaining rising health care costs and insurance premiums for the members so they can forego wage increases. Yeah, that's the trap that they got into here in the last decade or so. So, Cadillac plans are delayed ad infinitum, essentially. And then, Medicaid, two-tier Medicaid, the new people who join will get less benefits than those who are grandfathered in, right? Government funding is reduced, basically, right? It's going to have to be reduced because you got $500 billion in tax cuts for corporations that are rich that's not there anymore, right? And government funding contributions are going to be reduced. And no more federal money for Medicaid for new people who join, right? And no more federal money for Medicaid if doctors raise their prices. But we're going to have tax rebates extended to the self-employed, right? Not just to those who work for somebody else. You know, if you're small business, you can, whatever tax rebates will be part of this. It will all be paid for tax rebate. What remains and exists under this House plan will be simply tax rebates. Well, if you're poor and you know you're not making any money and you know you're not paying anything in taxes, you know you're making $15,000 a year or something like that, minimum wage folks, of which are tens of millions. If you're at minimum wage and you're not paying any income tax, right, under Obamacare, you would get a reimbursement anyway to cover your health insurance if you bought it on an exchange. Well, that's gone now, right? If you're not paying any taxes, you don't get any reimbursement because it's only a tax credit now. You don't pay taxes, you get no tax credit, right? That's it. But small self-employed businessmen and professionals, they'll be able to get a tax rebate because they file taxes, right? Okay, so these are all the ways that this plan is going to cover people here. This is the House plan, the House GOP, the Ryan plan. The big feature, again, is $500 billion a year in tax cuts for corporations and the rich, and the freezing of Medicaid and then phasing it totally out. No mandates anymore, right? No sliding scale of income for the reimbursements. Now it's a flat rate. We're going to expand health savings accounts. In other words, go back to George W. Bush's solution, right? Cut off Planned Parenthood, right? Keep these three features that people know about, block grants and rising premiums for less. That's what this thing is all about. Now, it's all because we had a healthcare cost crisis in this country that began to emerge under Bill Clinton. Right, that's why we had people more and more, tens of millions, increasingly from the Reagan period, increasingly uninsured. You see, it wasn't a problem before that, but increasingly became a problem. During the 1990s, somewhere between 20 million people were added to the uninsured roll. We had 50 million uninsured by 1999. Well, what did Clinton do? Well, he just changed the definition and eliminated 5 million, right? And it was under Clinton that the problem started, right? And why did it start? Well, because Clinton exempted the health insurance companies from antitrust laws, allowed them, therefore, to go to buy up their competitors, which meant they went to Wall Street, got the money from Wall Street. Wall Street demanded 22 to 25% rates of return. If we're going to loan you this money to buy up your competitors, but if you buy up your competitors, you're reducing the supply, classic monopoly kind of thing, and therefore you can raise your price. And you got away under Clinton with lifetime limits and pre-existing conditions. Bill looked the other way. And they just kept jacking up their prices. So Wall Street gets into it. Clinton lets them into it, exempting insurance from health care. Insurance companies are 40% of the cost of the $3 trillion plus a year in our health care. In other words, paper pushers are responsible for 40% or $1.2 trillion That's why you can save $1.2 trillion if you go to Medicare for All. Just think what you can do with $1.2 trillion. Hospitals, profit, nonprofit, change 30%. Doctors and pharma, the other 20%, and clinics and nursing homes, 10%. That's how these sectors in the healthcare industry break down. Insurers are the big money makers, and all they do is push paper around. They don't deliver any healthcare services. You know, well, what happened was the insurers, because of antitrust and these other features, started jacking up Wall Street, jacking up the prices, and it began spilling over to the hospitals. The hospitals see the insurance companies jacking up the prices. They say, well, you know, well, we ought to join that. And we had this movement, concentration movement as well, in for-profit hospitals, and we started destroying our nonprofit hospitals in the 90s and ever since. So the price cost increases spilled over from the health insurance companies to the hospital chains and so forth. And from there, it spilled over to the doctors. Doctors say, hey, you know, health insurers are making all this money, and the hospitals are making all this money. Let's raise our prices too, which they did, right? So you have this chain effect that began going on. And as costs and prices rose, people became more and more uninsured. You know, as recently as 2004, our annual spending is $1.8 trillion in this country on health care. Again, 40% of that, you know, health insurance companies, paper pushers, right? By 2015, over $3 trillion being spent, 18% of GDP. That compares to other countries that have more of a collective nationalized health plans in Europe, for example, and everywhere else, of 9 to 11% of GDP. Right? We pay 18% roughly going up. Right? Well, the difference is the profits going to health insurance companies. Right? That's the problem here. Cost increases. Premium cost increases, insurance, you know, under George Bush, 63% increases, 63%. Under Obama, roughly about 30%, 25-30%. Huge profits, right? And don't get confused when they say, oh, we've reduced health care spending. That doesn't mean they've reduced health care prices. You know, in fact, with continuing health care price increases, people use less services. In other words, they spend less. So, you know, this reduction in that the government says in health care spending doesn't mean they reduced the $3 trillion a year. No, still $3 trillion a year. People are rationing themselves. Because it's too expensive. Well, you know, when you go and buy these plans with $3,000 and $4,000 a year deductible, you're not going to use it unless you're in, big cost crisis. You know, you're not going to the doctors as much for quote minor things. Hmm? You're going to go only for the major things, or you're going to pay out of pocket. Yeah, you're going to go pay out of pocket, but you're going to ration as well because you don't want to pay out of pocket the full cost of doctor's visits, you know, which is like $200 a visit now just to go have the doctor, read your drug tests, right? That's $200 every time you go. That's what they charge now. Hmm? Yeah. Okay, so, spending rates of increase of 5-6% per year does not mean price increase limits of 5-6% per year. Quite the opposite. But this has been the whole thing since Bill Clinton. The whole idea was to cut costs, right, by rationing. And that's been continued under the HSAs of Bush, under the ACA of Clinton, of Obama, and now under the new plan, the Ryan plan, rationing. Pay more and get less. That's the solution. Okay. And that's how we've got this runaway healthcare price increases. And that's why the ACA did not solve it, and it's going to get even worse now. Thank you. under the Ryan plan. Okay, we'll keep up with this and we'll follow this a little bit more as we go on in time. I think our hour is about up here, and next week, well, the Fed's going to raise their interest rates again. What's going to be the impact? I predicted this months ago. Go read my blog, jackrackersnovels.com, and listen to this show earlier in the year, in January, I believe, when we talked about, predicted, here comes another increase. What's it going to mean? That's our show next week. Okay. Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions.